Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
This is the ZABEcast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go. Well, we made it through February, Andy, and we are on to March. And thank God this was probably one of the lowest rated weekends on the sports calendar. We're through the Olympics, through the All-Star game in the NBA. The combine was going on. Groan. We'll get to that in a second. College basketball had a number of really good matchups that turned into blowouts on Saturday. And I still don't give a shit about the NBA this early before the playoffs. So I don't know. What did you watch this weekend?
Yeah, I flipped around. I watched a documentary on Paul McCartney, which was good.
Really? Did it cover his expensive divorce, the most expensive in world history, according to many?
Yeah, that one-legged gold digger who took him for a ride.
Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, what is this, bros before hoes? You don't think she had a legitimate claim?
No, she was awful. This actually covered the Beatles breakup and then his foray into Wings.
Oh,
which,
right.
Which was, you know, the soundtrack of high school and college for me. I loved Wings, and my impression was he was the most successful of the Beatles striking out on their own. But in fact, he got a lot of criticism for Wings. It took a long time for them to get the respect that they deserved. And he put his wife in the band, who, you know, I'm sure she was well-meaning, but
this was the one-legged wife who he divorced?
No. His first wife, Linda Eastman from the Eastman Kodak fortune. She passed away probably in the 80s, maybe the 90s. The second marriage was the awful one. Now I guess he's on his third marriage now. But it was interesting that they did struggle. I thought that Wings was popular right out of the bat. I loved them, but I guess not everybody did.
Why do you think that maybe people didn't accept McCartney spinning off of the Beatles? Because the Beatles were so iconic that they should have done everything in their power to stay together, and nobody wanted to hear just one member of the Beatles doing something else without the rest of them?
I think the bar had been set so high with the Beatles that anything that they did would not be considered as good. The other thing is that Yoko Ono gets most of the blame for breaking up the Beatles, when in fact it was McCartney who wanted to go out on his own. And he disappeared for a while, which led to those rumors that he was dead.
Paul is dead, right? Wasn't there a song, if you played it backwards, supposedly you could hear Paul is dead, Paul is dead?
Might be. Right. Maybe the Walrus. I am the Walrus. I think it was that one that you played it backwards. Also on the Abbey Road, where he's the only one barefoot of the four crossing the street, like that was supposed to be a
secret. Right. Clue. There's a bunch of clues that McCartney's actually dead right now.
Right.
What was the most famous song for Wings? Was it Maybe I'm Amazed? Was that Wings?
Yeah, might be. I mean,
they chronicle what their biggest hit was, per se?
No, they didn't. But the first album was Ram, which was panned. People didn't like Ram. And then he did the Wings Over America tour.
Okay.
And there's also the part I vaguely. Oh, this is a great song.
This is a good song. All right. So then he does the Wings Over America tour.
Right. And then he goes to Japan. And they said, this was like 1980. And they said, if you go to Japan, make sure you don't take weed. He goes to Japan. He took weed. They found it in the suitcase. They threw him in jail. And at the time, it was like a 7-year sentence for that.
Wow.
And he's in the cell by himself. I guess he only spent one night. But he's thinking, because his family was with him, and he was thinking, my family's going to grow up on the outskirts of Japan while I'm stuck in prison for 7 years. And then they just released him the next day. Must have been pressure from the American government.
Wow, that's amazing. I'll have to watch that. Although, yep. Now the sports world's going to start ramping up because we're now into March Madness, and so things are going to start happening fast and furious. I want to talk before we get too far down the road. I did see the 80 Olympics documentary on Netflix.
And?
Holy shit, Andy. I was damn near crying 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
Choking back tears the rest of the way. You know, there is something to be said for the arc of young boys becoming old men and keeping those memories alive of when they were young. And to have the footage and the images and stuff that they had never seen, and the way they filmed it by putting it up on the big screen at the arena, and then focusing on their faces and seeing the joy and the tears well up in their eyes. I mean, that is brilliant documentary making right there.
It was really well done. And think about this. Most of them were, what, 21, 22 years old? There was nothing in their lives that could ever approach that again.
Yeah.
Ruzioni was the smartest one to say, I'm not even going to try. I'm going to spend the rest of my life living off of this. And he's done incredibly well.
What blew me away was Ruzioni's boyhood home. Oh, yeah. My God. A 3-story monster house outside of Boston that had 26 family members in it, something like that. Or 14, 15, and he was rattling the names off. He's like, first floor, it was me, my mom, my dad, Uncle Jimmy, Aunt Janice, blah, blah, blah. And he went rat-a-tat-tat-a-tat-tat-tat. Like, it was a freaking house full of people.
Do you know that is somewhat common in the Hasidic community? Very Orthodox Jews that you see with the long black... No. Living arrangement is similar to how Hasidic people live, that several families live in the same house and the men go out and make the money for all the families and they all, you know, kind of live together. It's not something, I mean, I thought my house was crowded. I'm the oldest of four.
But yeah.
That's nothing.
It's nothing. I hope that house is still standing and hope there's at least a plaque outside that said the great Ike Ruzioni and his family grew up there. I also love the story about how one of his uncles, he went to one of his uncles to say, hey, can I borrow $75? I want to sign up for a hockey camp. And the uncle said, sure, kid, here you go. You just got to pay me back. And then Ruzioni's like, when it started snowing, I was like, okay, we're in business. I can now shovel some, you know, driveways and make the money back. Got $75, went back to his uncle, said, here, I want to pay you back. And the uncle said, nah, keep it. You learned your lesson. You paid me back. I want you to keep it. Do good, boy. Ends up winning the gold medal and scoring the game-winning goal. Yeah. Unbelievable.
And but he also said that, you know, if the puck goes 6 inches to the right.
Yeah, I know. Right.
He says he's painting bridges for a living. Now they're naming bridges after him.
Right. I also like that they included sort of the rump end sad footnotes to that whole episode, including like Steve Janizak, the backup goalie, who didn't play a minute because of Jim Craig, and how he said, look, this is sometimes your role in life is to do whatever is asked of you, even though, I mean, he was a great goalie in college. He was like, I just won all these awards. And we won a championship. And then I'm on the bench behind Craig, but I did what I had to do. But he met his wife, who was an interpreter. And he said, that Olympics, even though I didn't play, the most important thing in my life because I met my wife.
And think of Herb Brooks. This is like a reverse Steve Spurrier who had to have Danny Werfel in the NFL. Herb Brooks wins a national championship with Janizak as his goalie and chooses the kid from Boston University to do the job.
But that's what it took. And, you know, it was sort of sad that they said, you know, after it was done, Brooks never really reconnected with the team in the months and the years afterwards before he died, because he was just wired in a way that did not allow for nostalgia.
Yeah, well, I think that's the way he coached the team, too. He realized, if we're going to win, now, you know, what's forgotten is he did not expect in his wildest dreams to beat the Russians. That was not like how he set out in the Olympics, but he was determined that they were going to make a better showing than they had made in like the last 20 years. And he also carried with him. How about his dad? He's the last guy cut from the 60 team. He sits with his dad, watches him win the gold medal. And dad goes, "I guess they took the right guy."
Yeah, it looks like they cut the right guy. I mean, what a savage thing!
Wow.
Yeah, but what I loved is they had footage that I didn't know existed. They had some really high quality film stock that was run at a high frame rate, so it was very smooth, slow motion of the action. It was not just the grainy television copy, which was not very good. So the producers found some great assets to layer in there. And even though the basic shape of the story is not any different, the way it was told was beautiful and the footage was great. And hell of a documentary, man. It's a couple Kleenex one for sure.
Yep.
All right. Let's get to some weird stories from today, since everything else was kind of boring. You don't want to talk about your Terps losing to Rutgers for the second time.
I watched it. I mean, the first half, they were god awful. They had 14
one
turnovers.
14.
And they got
three.
Got back in it, but lost. They're not very good. And the thing about college basketball is these days you can be really crappy one year and really good the next, and then go right back to being crappy. There's no such thing as a program anymore.
So you were quite good last year, Maryland. They were quite good last year, Maryland. Went to the Sweet 16. But now they're terrible. Their hope is they'll be good next year because they got a couple of hot shot recruits coming in.
Mm-hmm. Right. But we
How
don't know.
Do you know.
Yeah, you don't.
How do you know? And people forget, Michigan has guys coming in. Michigan State has guys coming in. Everybody has guys coming in. Who says your guys are going to be better than their guys? Who says that suddenly you're going to have a culture of, okay, we're a good team again?
Right. Well, you know, Duke every year, they're back in, and it's all new guys. They've been playing the one-and-done game forever.
Andy, I'm going to put my hand on your shoulder right now. You're not Duke, buddy.
I know, they're not.
Maryland is not Duke, okay?
That one time they were competitive, although...
That one time they were once sort of competitive, yes.
Well, not that one.
They're once on that level.
No, they were for a long period of time when Gary Williams was the coach, they went to the Big Ten from the ACC for money, and I knew immediately that football was going to be a problem, which it has been. And basketball, they've been competitive, but then everything changed with the NIL, and they don't have that kind of money, and I don't know how they're going to get it either.
Football is a sinkhole for that university because it's just not getting traction, and it requires so much money, and you're in such a competitive conference, the Big Ten. I don't know how they turn around. I also saw a story about Maryland's athletic department finances, and they're going the wrong way. That fiscal year, which actually encompassed last year's basketball season, which was a good one, was down from 2024. I can only imagine what this year's number is going to be. It's going to be even worse.
I renewed my season tickets, though, and they sent me this nice layout of the stadium, so at least I got that going for me.
What is it? Looks like an album you're holding there, like a 33 and a third RPM album.
It says, "Blueprints capture the depth of what we build to last. For Maryland fans and for Terps football, this is your foundation." And they show me where my seats are. You know, I know, not that I don't know where my seats are.
All right. Gagazunt. Let's talk about some weird things today. Did you see what happened in the half marathon world championships in Atlanta?
Where would you find that? What channel is that on?
It popped up on my timeline because here's why it's a story. You ready?
Yeah.
Jess McClain had a sizable lead with just a mile and a half to go. But the lead guide bike took her and another competitor off course. by the time they realized, whoops, you've made a wrong turn, even though the official race guide bike was like, come this way, it was too late, and they then looped back, and they ended up not winning. They, of course, appealed this, and, you know, the organizers said, yeah, you know, that's a legitimate gripe. We shouldn't have had our official guide bike take you off course, but hands in the air, nothing we can do about it.
Bud Selig style, right, from the All-Star game.
I mean, that is incredible. What do you think? And there actually, there's some people in the comments that said, well, as a competitor, it's your job to know the course. And I'm thinking, man, that would be hard to do. If you're leading the race, the guide bike is taking you one way, and you're like, I'm pretty sure the course goes left on Elm, and then we finish down Main Street to the Tate. You sure we go on the right way? Reminds me of other marathon such screw-ups, such as the Rosie Ruiz taking the subway in New York one year to cheat.
I think that was it New York or Boston?
Was it Boston?
Might have been
Rosie Boston. Ruiz was the subway marathon cheater, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, she cheated, and it became known as a Rosie Ruiz. Like, that was like it became a way of doing things.
Yes. Like a shorthand, you know, yeah. To pull a Rosie Ruiz. And then there is this, maybe it was an accident. I would tend to doubt it. This was in the UConn-UMass hockey game. Overtime, 2 minutes to go. And here's a 2-on-1 coming up. This game is at UMass. 2-on-1 coming up for UConn. And the lights go out, Andy. That's really unfortunate for the Huskies. Yeah, you think? Do you think that was done on purpose?
No.
You don't?
No.
Why not?
No. I have faith in humanity that someone wouldn't do that. I like to think the best of people.
Maybe you don't appreciate the depths of the rivalry between UConn and UMass when it comes to hockey in Chowd territory.
Beanport. Is that what they do every year? Beanport.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk combine. The combine is going the way it looks like of the Pro Bowl. Participation numbers by the players continues to plummet. In some events, in some categories, it's almost half of what it was before. Also, the number one pick, presumed, that would be Fernando Mendoza, did not throw because nothing could help his stock at this point. So he said, I'm just not going to throw. The guys that did throw as quarterbacks were all guys trying to fluff up their stock, like Carson Beck, who was booed, by the way, by Indiana fans at the combine. What a sicko you are to be booing somebody at the NFL combine, for God's sakes.
Well, wait, back up. What a sicko you are to be in the stands at the combine. How much of a geek do you have to be to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So there is also from the combine, Aaron Glenn of the Jets falling asleep on the camera.
It's so Jets. It's just,
I mean, this is like, it's one of these things where you don't blame him, right? Because it's a boring thing that is done. I believe Mike Sherman, who was then the GM and the coach of the Packers, was caught quickly dozing off. And it was talked about for a long time. It's completely unfair. But then again, when you are Aaron Glenn and you've had the season you've had, here he is right here, Andy.
Deep prospects as Aaron Glenn looks on for the Jets.
Look at how quickly, you know, like somebody must have tapped him on the leg or said something. This was a long camera shot from somewhere on the concourse. Some director for the NFL Network did him dirty because they probably had an ISO cam on Glenn for a while. And they're like, just hold it, hold it. Yep. I think he's about to doze off. Okay, right now, take camera two. Roll camera two. Got him. What do you think?
The prospects as Aaron Glenn looks on for the Jets. Fernando Mendoza won. Jeremiah will also see on
The sports radio version of that was Mike Francesa falling asleep during a Sweeney Murdy report on the Yankees some years ago.
Not only did he fall asleep, but he then angrily denied it. And then after the denials became too hard to sort of sustain, he then excused it by saying, I was up all night with my sick kid.
Yeah.
And right. That's why I fell asleep.
That's Mike.
Okay. I have fallen asleep on the air. Have you?
I don't think so.
Okay. I fell asleep on an overnight shift on ESPN radio.
I haven't done many overnight.
It was like a 5-hour stretch that they had us doing. And it was up there in Bristol, creepy ass Bristol. The ESPN radio studio was so pathetic.
I worked out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. You remember that? It was like a closet, truly a closet.
Yeah. Oh, well, they designed it. The TV people designed it so you couldn't see the producer, at least in the original one. I think they changed it, but they thought it worked like a television studio, you know, like they're down the hall. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but it was overnight's 5-hour shift, and I remember falling asleep briefly, and it's quite the shock, and it's quite terrifying to then wake up and go, oh my God, I'm on the air, and I don't quite know what my last sentence was. So I need to maybe pick it up with something generic, I guess. But you don't think you've ever fallen asleep on the air.
That was probably the days before Twitter when you did that, right?
Way before, 99.
Yeah, so nowadays, if you did that, there would be tweets. Hey, I'm listening to this guy Zabin overnight on ESPN. I think he just fell asleep.
I don't even know if there would be tweets about it. They were not running video, by the way, either. Because I don't think YouTube really became a thing till 2006, I want to say.
No.
So, yeah. So, anyway, the combine is kind of dying. Is it useful in any way?
I don't know. You know, remember Maurice Claret, the guy from Ohio State, and he tried to sue to get into the NFL early and didn't. Mm-hmm. Is that 2 years? He went to the combine. He didn't even finish the 40. And word was out that he was having problems. He was carrying around his own water bottle.
Which was vodka.
Yeah, it was vodka. And Mike Shanahan still took him in the third round. Now, he had to cut him before the season opened. But even with this, what he saw in the combine, and probably there were rumors flying, he still took a chance on him in the third round. Didn't work out.
Well, to me, there's some people that really believe in the interviews as having value at the combine. And I laugh and I said, you know, these guys are coached up on it. You know, who also aced the interview was Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
So that didn't really help at all. And I remember Mark Sanchez, who, by the way, according to prosecutors, was hepped on all kinds of drugs when he was arrested, been stabbed in self-defense by the truck driver that he nearly beat to death with his bare hands, including fentanyl was in his system. Oh, my God. Mark Sanchez, I remember Steve Young said he was almost presidential in his handling of the interviews. And I'm like, who cares? Like, you're not going to get any good intel out of that. Also, if you run a slightly slow 40 time and you're a wide receiver, sometimes they'll say, well, wait a minute. We'll see what he does at his pro day. And also the hand timer might have been a little bit slow on it. Because Carnell Tate of Ohio State ran like a 4.5-something 40. And then they're like, well, we went back and looked on tape, and it was actually a bit faster than that. And so somebody pointed out the combine was supposed to be the one event where you could get everybody together and get concrete, non-biased data. And now it's become, well, as soon as it's done, there's going to be people going, actually, he was a little faster than that, or his arm length is a little bit longer than that. Did you see the Reuben Bain Jr.?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a big deal. He could wind up with the Commanders, and I hope he does. He looks
God, that'd be fantastic. But his arms are 2 inches shorter than Aaron Donald, who was all world, all pro, straight to Canton. 2 inches. You're telling me this is going to make a meaningful difference in whether a pass rusher can be good in the NFL? I'm not fucking buying it.
Doesn't Joe Burrow have small hands? Doesn't seem to be a problem.
I don't know if he does or not. The hand thing is also a bit dubious, if you ask me.
You know what amazed me? I watched I just flipped over during the halftime or something, the Maryland game, to see what was going on in the combine. I'm seeing 340-pound linemen run 4.49.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, Jerry Rice's time was 4.7. Jerry, so, you know, oh, he can't take a wide receiver runs a 4.7. Oh, no, you can't do that.
Also, I guess Carnell Tate measured out at 6'2" even, and they thought he was a little bigger. He might have been listed at 6'3" and something. Mm. Somebody made the point of, you know who else was a little bit smaller and ran a kind of slowish 40? Puka Nacua. He turned out pretty fucking good. He's probably the best receiver in the NFL. Puka Nacua was like a fourth-round draft pick. Like, there's just, it's all still guesswork. I think I could do, if I was an NFL person, I could do as well with three things. Three things only instead of any of this combine stuff. You ready? Game film, obviously, one. Two, social media, just looking at this kid's social media and getting a sense for who he is. And the third thing would just be medicals. Just make sure he doesn't have a trick knee. That's like, off of those three data points, I'd do as well as all this other stuff.
Probably. You know the name Mike Mamula? Mike Mamula, yes, was the first workout warrior. And he spent his time from the end of his season to the combine working on the combine drills, and he crushed them. And he was like a mid-first round pick and had a 3 or 4 year career.
You know who else crushed the combine drills, although it was not the combine, it was a pro day, is Adam Archuleta. Archuleta tweeted over the weekend, Andy, that he had dedicated himself to becoming faster because that's what he was told in high school. He just wasn't fast enough, and he trained. And he was a pretty good safety at Arizona State. The workout stuff blew people away. Ended up being picked in the first round, late first, by the Rams. He was a good player with the Rams, but nothing special. Played 5 years, and then Danny Boy bought him for way too much money. And you and I were sitting there, like every Redskin fan, going, is he ever going to play? And we had Gibbs on once a week, and we kept dragging Gibbs, saying, so Archuleta, is he going to play at all? And at one point he said, he's in there. He's on the punt protection team.
He's in packages. That was a classic Danny move. He was going to go to Chicago because Lovie Smith had been the defensive coordinator with the Rams, and he got the head coaching job in Chicago. And he said to his agent, oh, yeah, I want to play with Lovie. And he says, okay, do me a favor. Before you go meet with the Bears, just make a stop in Washington. Bears were going to pay him $6 million. Danny gave him $10 million. So, you know, what are you going to do?
He was like, don't let him get off the plane, because that was winning for Danny.
Yeah, yeah. Danny was outspending people, so therefore they couldn't have him.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And he didn't understand anything about the cap or anything. He was just a kid with a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. Also, apparently Diego Pavia, who is a grade-A jackass, is allegedly getting advice from Johnny Manziel.
That's his idol. But I would say this. I know he was a complete jackass with when he didn't get the Heisman, but I watched 3 or 4 of his games,
and
there's something there, man. Somebody, I don't know if he's a quarterback. I don't know what he is. Maybe he's like a guy who comes in on certain situations. But man, is he a competitor? He refuses to lose.
Yeah, but
he's a shrimp.
But he doesn't shrimp, and he probably can't play within schedule. He probably doesn't have the accuracy to be in the NFL. The NFL game at quarterback is a 2.7 second, read it and deliver it up a gnat's ass with accuracy passing game. That's
a
pro game.
Understand. But Manziel didn't flame out because he didn't have talent. That wasn't the reason he washed out of the league.
Well, he was a drug addict.
Right.
You didn't like it when I said that plainly on the air because – I didn't have like certified proof that he was a drug addict. You must have thought we were going to get sued because I had an opinion that he was a drug addict.
No, I did. You didn't say it was an opinion. You stated it as fact.
Well, they had the photo of him with the rolled up 20 doing lines of coke in the bathroom.
Yeah. Well, that's evidence, but you know, it's not.
Well, anyway, if Johnny Manziel's giving him good advice, like, hey, don't throw your chances away like I did, then maybe it's not the worst guy to give the advice, although I'm a little bit skeptical about that. Somebody tweeted, this would be like if Cam Scataboo got advice from O.J. Simpson.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That's pretty brutal. Okay, so on the NFL front, now we're going to enter the free agency period. We're going to enter the period where teams start declaring, yeah, we're going to cut this guy. we're going to cut that guy. There are going to be a number of really formerly expensive, high-profile quarterbacks out there that could be got. And it's going to be fascinating to see who decides to get in the business of each of these guys, like Kyler Murray, like Tua Tagovailoa. Kirk is going to shake free in Atlanta. It looks like Vegas is going to get rid of Geno Smith. Guy's going to be out there. And apparently the Vikings are getting out of the J.J. McCarthy business already.
Are they sure about that? Because he's still on the rookie deal.
Well, their GM said last week, they're like, yeah, we're not looking to store. We need to take a step back, basically.
I think that Sam, this what happens in the league is something happens and then everybody copies it. So there's the feeling that one of these guys will resurface like Sam Darnold.
Right.
So you take him in for a year, let him be your backup, and then and Kyle Shanahan has become kind of like what Nick Saban was for coaches. Quarterbacks go there, they don't have to play, they just kind of resuscitate their career. So could happen.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some definite reaches of, hey, we can do it. I get the boyfriend, I can fix her mentality. Yeah, right. You know, I can fix too. I can fix
she'll her. Change for me. Yeah. That
one. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Kirk Cousins, by the way, 4-year, $180 million deal. And as soon before the ink was even dry, the Falcons said, hey, we should take another franchise quarterback, 8th overall.
Yeah.
In Penix, who's had 3 knee surgeries, and he's currently coming back from yet another one. What mismanagement, my God.
The only problem with Kirk is when he does play, he doesn't win big games.
No,
he never. And that's a problem.
No, he's a competent quarterback. He has engineered a few comebacks. He has padded his stats greatly with, fourth quarter empty calories and the team is down big. But he's had a better career than many quarterbacks. So,
he's had a great career and he's made a ton of money
right by betting on himself basically every step of the way.
And nothing wrong.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. Did you see the McDonald's CEO that's gone viral?
Yeah.
Talking about the Big Arch sandwich and whether or not people believe, like, this guy, somehow this actually, I want to play this here, somehow this actually got approved by the marketing department. I guess it's because in a big company like that, no one is going to say no, right? They're all going to be yes men, yes women. McDonald's CEO Chris Kempczinski was on camera to say, this new sandwich we got, the Big Arch.
We have tested already in Portugal, Germany, Canada. I love this product. It is so good. I'm going to do a tasting right now.
By the way, calling your food a product, also bad. A little bit weird and creepy.
But I'm going to eat this for my lunch, just so you know. So,
first of all, why does he have to say, I'm going to eat it for my lunch? That's what you do. You should eat the food that your restaurant serves.
Here we go. First, holy cow. God,
oh my God, look at that thing right there.
You've got a very unique kind of sesame poppy sort of bun on it. We've got 2 quarter-pound patties, a delicious Big Arch sauce, and of course some lettuce. So, there's so much going on with this. First of all, let's try to get this thing. I don't even know how to attack it. Got so much to it. Oh, there's also some crispy onions on here as well. I see those kind of coming out. All right.
Eat the burger. Stop filibustering. Eat the burger.
Moment of truth.
Took a supermodel size bite. Al McPherson would have had a big jump.
That is so
that's
good.
That's a big bite for a big arch.
No, that's not a big bite.
No. It's not. You got to get yourself one of those linemen, those 350-pound linemen, to eat a hamburger. They're used to that.
I think the best burger ad ever was Verlander's wife for Carl's Jr., the big juicy burger at the Super Bowl. Right.
Yeah.
She was like in a bikini just housing a cheeseburger. Like, don't overthink it. We don't want to see your nerdy ass CEO pretending to like the product. Yeah. Give us a hot babe in a bikini chowing down.
Look at this. It's got two patties on it. Who does that? It's like, oh, it looks like a pretty good burger. Yeah, it's okay.
All right.
And they're like $9 too. They're not cheap.
I know. They're not. Nothing's cheap these days. Speaking of eating and you being a noted fat shamer, Andy, because you are in good shape. You are. I mean, it's okay. It's your way of motivating, you know? Did you see Demi Moore at the fashion show in Milan?
I did not.
Okay. Are you a fan of her overall look and vibe? She, to me, was one of the hottest women in Hollywood for a long time.
I thought she was very attractive, yes.
Okay. Quite pleasing to the eye.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, she's much younger than I am, but yes.
Okay. I want to show you a picture of just how skinny she is now. Also, did you see Kelly Osbourne, who has gone viral?
Yes, that's
unbelievably
that's sad. Strange. That looks like anorexia.
Well,
yeah, that looks awful.
It's not. I mean, it's in her face. That's part of the thing that's, you know, and everyone's saying that it's all because of Ozempic overdose, basically, in Hollywood. That these Hollywood superstars are taking Ozempic, Mounjaro, what are the other drug, different names for the same basic drug? You wouldn't know. You're naturally skinny. There she is right there, Eddie. Oh, my.
Yeah, she's anorexic. God. Looks terrible. She's not good. It doesn't look healthy. There are thin women who look healthy. She does not look healthy.
No, definitely not. You look good. A number of people have commented as I posted these viral clips of the podcast. They're like, wow, I pictured Andy to be a lot older.
He looks. Somebody said like Wilford Brimley. My God. First of all, you have
out of here.
You'd have to be old to remember Wilford Brimley. And when Wilford Brimley was around, he was really old and fat and had this big push broom mustache. Yeah, I wouldn't think that. But, you know, maybe people think I sound that old. I don't know.
Maybe it's because your attitude skews older. Your lifestyle skews closer to 80. So when they see you, they're like, wow, he's a lot younger. You know, you do sort of have a doppelganger, and it's not the best doppelganger. I don't know who's if anyone's told you that.
Who is it? Who?
Well, it's a guy who, let's just put it this way, almost probably surely did not kill himself.
Who's that?
Saying.
He
died in prison, but nobody really believes he committed suicide.
Oh, you think I look like Jeffrey Epstein? Oh, my God.
Listen, I'm just saying, Andy, there is the thin gray beard with a little bit of dark in it. Overall look, I noticed, I was like, oh, damn.
Well,
kind of noticed that now.
Well, I hopefully have, other than maybe partial facial resemblance, I would hope to God that I have no other similarities to that guy.
Of course not. You know what I say? All you Jewish guys look alike.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Mazel, mazel.
Me and Murray the cop from The Odd Couple, we look alike, right?
All right.
Murray Gresher.
Yeah. So just to end here, it's been one full week now, and I think, I hope that the whole USA men's hockey and the State of the Union non-controversy has come to an end finally, because it just didn't need to be this way. These men and women should be celebrated fully, talk about their exploits. It became pretty much a political food fight from the usual suspects online. Last night, Saturday Night Live, the host was this guy who plays a gay hockey player on an HBO series. And so he was the host, and he brought up two of the women. Hillary Knight and forget the other gal. And they capped off, I think, the whole week was, this is a good way to kind of end it with a little wink and a nod to who got invited where and to what.
I mean, both of your teams just won the gold.
Thanks. The last time the men did that was 46 years ago.
And the last time we did that was two whole Olympics ago.
Nice burn. But these gold medals aren't just for us. They're for all hockey fans. Yours too.
Oh, so can I try one on?
No. No.
All right. So that, I mean, let's let that be the last final word for me. Do you have any?
By the way, I should ask you
on what happened after the gold medal was won.
The thing I want to ask you, your brother's older than you, right?
Hold on, Andy. Sorry. Hold on. Yeah. Did you have any final thoughts?
I just was on the hockey. It occurred to me, and I should have mentioned it last week. Your brother, he's older than you, right?
Yeah, 2 years older.
Did you share a room at any point?
No, never shared a room.
Okay, because that was one of the cool parts about him talking, you know, about sleeping in the same room, I guess, with his brother the night before the championship game. And each of them was talking about the scenario of scoring the game-winning goal. I thought that was so cool. I have a friend who slept in the same room with his older brother, and I'm sure those kind of conversations, you know, probably took place. That was really one of the cool moments of the whole thing for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's put it to rest and let's keep the focus on the athletes and their amazing performances, and that's what really matters.
But the Olympics always get politicized. It's inevitable. It's just the way things.
The problem is we don't really have a neutral place, you know, to celebrate national athletic heroes. Even SNL, let's be honest, they're not neutral. But at least it was in a funny little lighthearted way. Also, did you notice that Jack Hughes hasn't fixed his tooth yet?
I know. I'm wondering if that is a moneymaker for him now. There's got to be some commercials to be made, right?
I mean, I think, yeah, once he fixes it, a large part of his instant I see him in the airport fame goes away.
Yeah.
But I'd imagine there's got to be some damage, and you don't want to roll around with an open half tooth like that.
No, but still. But look at Michael Strahan. I mean, it hasn't hurt his career that he's got that big gap, has it?
No, and it's now a thing. And I think there was a woman that also, a famous model that had a
Lauren Hutton, right.
That, yeah, Lauren Hutton was one. And Cindy Crawford never got rid of her mole. So there's that. Jewel never got rid of her little snaggle tooth that she could have all these years. So if you got a hook, go with it.
That's right.
Andy, as always, a pleasure. We are through the doldrums of winter. It is up, up, and away from here. We are closing in 2 weeks from last night, Selection Sunday, and the jockeying has already begun. Bruce Pearl on TNT lobbying for his son, Steven, who's currently driving the Auburn Tigers into the ditch this year after he was handed the team, saying, you know, these small schools like Miami, Ohio, yeah. If they lose a game, we can't have two bids from the MAC. You know, we got other worthy teams like Auburn.
Right. Remember when St. Joe's got a first number one seed and Billy Packer took off on them and they screamed back at him, shut up.
Exactly. And didn't they make a run that year after?
I think they did. I don't think they made the Final Four, but I think they went pretty deep. And
a good run.
And I remember when Maryland won the ACC tournament in 2004. Billy Packer, who was doing that also for like whatever it was, Jefferson Pilot, mm-hmm. said, oh, yeah, they're going to have to make a deep run to make the tournament. And Gary got ripshit mad and then won the tournament and said, basically, take that, Billy. Yeah.
2 weeks from yesterday, Selection Sunday, 26 days away from Zabe Vegas, 2026. We'll be at the MGM Grand for the Sweet 16 Thursday and Friday Papa Shot contest. Hopefully a little live podcast. We got Mr. X coming out. Charch is coming out. My man Armin Sarian is coming out from Milwaukee. Naki has said he'll be there if Virginia is not in the Sweet 16 because his daughter is the director of basketball ops for the Hoos on the men's side. So he's like, if they're in the Sweet 16, I got to be there. Otherwise, I'll be out there. It'll be a grand time. If you want information on it, just email me, zabe@yahoo.com, and I'll let you know how you can be part of the festivities. And maybe next year I'll bring Andy back because he was on one of these many years ago. We had a great time.
I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, it was great.
So, yeah.
I got yelled at by Bobby Knight. We got to meet Billy Packer. It was a great time.
It was fun. We had a room, special room where we got to watch and gamble. It was fun.
I know. Vegas ain't the same, though, Andy. It's changed a lot in 15 years. That was probably the last time you were in Vegas.
Yeah, probably.
All right. All right, Andy. Good to talk as always, my friend. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening, everybody. Rate and review, and always remember to tell a friend. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.